Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things food with your favorite chefs, food influencers, and Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we are thrilled to welcome back an award-winning chef and Food Network host sharing insights into his thrilling new culinary competition show and the release of his 8th cookbook. He is a chef, restaurateur, cookbook author, and host of the brand new show 24 in 24, Last Chef Standing. It's Michael Simon. Michael, welcome back to the podcast. Hard to believe it's been almost 3 years since you were last on. How have you been?
I've been good. That's what they said. Last time you did this was season 2. I'm like, that didn't seem that long ago, but right? I guess it was. I've been good. You know, no complaints. Staying busy. I mean, doing a lot of stuff with Food Network, which has been fantastic. Restaurant stuff is busy. Liz still likes me. Everything seems right with the world.
Well, you have been a busy guy. And speaking of that Food Network stuff, I am so excited to check out the new show, 24 in 24, Last Chef Standing. It promises to be Food Network's most grueling and ambitious competition show to date. So I guess, first of all, can you just kind of give us a rundown of how the show works?
Absolutely. I mean, it was insane. I mean, like at first I thought like, I think this is crazy. But then as guest chefs were coming in to judge, they're like, this is crazy, you know? But then as we started talking about it, it was like, one of the cool things is most of the chefs that came in to judge had all at some point owner operated their own restaurants. Mm. So they had been through the grind, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And to me, it really reminded me of a restaurant opening where, mm-hmm. you know, when Liz and I opened our first restaurant in 96, we didn't sleep for 3 days. Like we literally were in the restaurant painting, hanging, doing all this stuff. And then we opened and we still had to serve customers, you know, it's like, oh God, we're never going to sleep again. And like the pressure of this show felt similar to me in that nature. So the premise of the show, though, is 24 chefs, 24 challenges, 24 hours. Mm. And we filmed for 24 straight hours. Wow. They brought in 3 different camera crews. Every 8 hours, camera crews rotated. We broke the wall the entire time. We didn't worry about like, oh God, there's that camera guy in the shot. Who cares? Like, just get everything. So it's going to be a really unique, different viewing experience, I think, for most Food Network viewers, which is really exciting to me. Look, I've been doing food TV for a long time now. So to do something that feels unique 26 years into doing television, it was pretty special to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've never heard of anything like this, obviously. And you kind of, you know, alluded to the fact that it reminds you, or at least captures kind of the energy, the chaotic energy of a restaurant, of the culinary industry, that 24/7 kind of nature of it. Take us inside some of these challenges. Like, why does it remind you of a restaurant? Is it just because it's so crazy and grueling, or are there actual, like, also challenges that are reminiscent of what you would do in a restaurant?
I think a little bit of both. You know, I mean, the very first challenge that we had was a speed challenge, and it was like, you know, here's basic knife techniques that you need to do daily in the restaurant business as a chef. And obviously, the more efficient you could do them, the more successful you're going to be if you're still doing them correct. And so, I mean, we did the speed / knife challenge first because we didn't want anybody to be too tired of that challenge. But it was a very good for me, you know, as I've gotten even more experienced as a chef and leading bigger kitchen. Like my first restaurant, I had 3 cooks that worked for me when we owned it, you know, and then like Lola, you know, we had 40 cooks. So to get to watch all these people cook, I've developed the skill of quickly determining like this person's very good at that. This person's going to succeed. This person might fail. This person I'm not sure about, you know. So even though I wasn't a judge on this show, to watch those early battles, so to speak, I found myself forming an opinion on who I thought was going to do good or bad really early. And it turned out I was wrong on a lot of levels.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, I wasn't always right. But the ebb and flow of it was so interesting because some people started out really strong and then they started to get tired, or they started to get worn down, or the mental drain started to hit them and maybe they dipped a bit and then they rose back up. And, you know, so you really got to see the full emotion of, I feel, what it's like to be a chef. Like, so many people are always like, reality TV, da, 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 you know, and I find so much of it's not really that real in reality TV as a general statement. But this was, when I was watching it happen, filming it, I'm like, this is as real gets. I mean, a lot of people don't want to talk about how difficult the restaurant business actually is, or that it should change, or all those things. And I agree on a lot of those facts. But the reality of it is if you go into business for yourself, this is how the restaurant business is, at least for a period, you know, at least for a period of time. I personally, you know, I've opened for other people and myself probably 25 restaurants in my career. And you would think that at this point I would have it down to a science. It's still brutal. Every single one is brutal and rewarding, but difficult. And I feel that that's what this show ultimately shows. It's like, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be stressful. It's going to be exhausting, but it's going to be very rewarding in the end. Even I feel even if for the people that didn't win, but made it kind of deep in, they felt that also. Like every single person that, even the people that were eliminated, you know, after the first couple, they all came up to me afterwards and thanked me, you know, which I thought was very interesting because sometimes in competition shows, I mean, I remember I judged a season of Next Iron Chef. It was the only time I ever judged. And the people that went home were not thanking me. we'll just leave it at that.
I mean, fair enough. And these competitors that you speak of, 24 chefs, they kind of range from, you know, culinary icons to kind of these newer rising stars in the business. How does that dynamic affect the competition and how far they might go?
I think it affects it a lot on a lot of levels. There's a question that people are always asking me is, could you do this? And intuitively I say, well, yeah, of course I can, but I'd be curious. I mean, I was up for 35 straight hours filming the show and there was a time Scotty Conan was one of the judges. Like he came in and Scott and I have known each other forever. He's like, walks in, he goes, bro. I'm like, hey, Scott. He goes, you don't look so good. Thanks, Scott. I'm like, man, I have makeup on right now. I mean, geez. But I do think that there having experience helps, but ultimately, I don't think that's what's going to allow you to win or lose. I think that what we saw with the show is the people that had really great technique as chefs were able to lean on that even in their most exhausted period. You know, I think sometimes with cooks and chefs, there's a lot of people that cook or perform with a lot of smoke and mirrors, mm-hmm. like especially in this, you know, like the TikTok generation where like they want something to look a certain way without necessarily being too concerned with how it tastes. Mm-hmm. But in this competition, the chefs that excelled were the chefs that had very strong rooted technique. So when they kind of mentally started going, they could rely on those instincts that they built over time. And mm-hmm. that was whether they were young or old or indifferent. It was just some people I feel are more trained in that manner where mm-hmm. technique is king. And I feel like it, certainly in this competition that like, I mean, it's what I always leaned on in Iron Chef back in the day. I just always felt like my technique was going to be better. So ultimately my food would taste better. And I think that the chefs that did well in this took that approach.
Yeah. It's almost like you have to rely on that muscle memory when you're so tired and fatigued, you know, mentally and
100%. 100%. It's like for people that run half marathons, marathons, mm-hmm. or have done anything of that nature. You know, there's a point where your body's like, kiss my ass. You know, like you're done. But like muscle memory takes over. Or even with pressure, it's like I like to golf, you know, mm-hmm. now in my twilight years. But like, you know, even in golf, when I get really nervous or like I always say I never choke. And it's because when the pressure kind of mounts up, I know that I can rely on muscle memory to kind of push me through. It's why I win so much money off Bobby Flay in golf, because he has bad golf muscle memory.
How would Bobby fare on this competition format?
Bobby would do very good because he's very good at competition. I always felt like no one's better at competition than me. And I mean, people are going to hear this. He's one of the few people that I think that he's better at competition than me. Because he in cooking,
yeah,
I can beat him at just about everything else on the regular. But in cooking, like if we competed 10 times, I think he'd probably beat me 6. But I don't compete as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. And he still competes all the time.
All the time.
So it, like, again, it's a muscle memory thing where it's reps. Like, yeah, he gets more reps in. And there is something to, like, you know, when I won Next Iron Chef, God, 17 years ago now or whatever it was, you know, I was still in the kitchen every day working the line. So mm-hmm. When we were competing in that show against some of the best chefs in the world at that time, my advantage was like my reps were very high, like mm-hmm. butchering, cooking, like all the time. Like it was just something I did 15 hours a day anyhow. So now I was just doing it in front of cameras. So I think anybody that could kind of go back to that point and use that to their advantage excels in competition.
All right. Well, we'll have to see if Bobby listens to the podcast to see if he can find that little Easter egg that you just dropped that he's better at you than competition.
And he knows it. He knows it's true. I beat him in golf most of the time. Look, people would look at Bobby Flay and look at me and there's like, there's no way that Michael could ever beat Bobby in a race. I beat him in a race on his own show. A foot race on his own, and then he wanted to film it again. I'm like, it's not happening. I won. We're done.
Oh man, I love it. I love you guys' friendship as well. No, I mean, you've mentioned like just how, you know, daunting this whole setup is for everybody, not just for the chefs. You've got the camera crews, like you said, that have to switch out every 8 hours. You know, like this is a huge undertaking for you. I mean, what was most challenging for you personally, just to be up for 35 hours, be on your game and hosting a show?
I'm going to say it tested my entire skill set at a lot of levels. Like, fortunately, from when I did the Chew, like live TV, I'm used to, and this was almost like live TV. So that helped, you know, Iron Chef and other shows competition wise that I've done, I feel gave me a unique look into their head a little bit and trying to figure out what they're thinking. The hardest thing for me is, I would say over half the chefs I've known for a decent amount of time that competed. And just because of kind of how I was raised and brought up and everything else, when I saw them flailing, I wanted to help, mm-hmm. you know, and I realized that I'm not there to help. I mean, I'm there to encourage. I could certainly encourage, but I'm not there to help. And it's sometimes hard for myself to not, when you're watching someone who you know and in some, you know, and are friends with, and they're like going down in a heap to not like go dice the onion or, you know, flip the steak or whatever they may need. So that was difficult for me. The staying up part, it wasn't too bad. I mean, there were a couple moments where I was like, well, like, you know, you have an IFB in, so there's people watching that are saying like, go look at this person, go look at that person. And there was a moment where I kind of like glazed over. Yeah, it was like, and I heard the, you know, Brian Lando, who I've worked with for years and years and years on Food Network shows, he's like, sign it, sign it, sign it. And I'm like, oh, God, oh, I'm here, I'm back. Like, I was awake, but I wasn't really awake. And then when we got done with the show, you know, I was up for about 35 straight hours because we had to do the walkthrough and blockouts and all that stuff prior to starting. And I didn't drive home. Someone drove me home because driving home would have been bad at that point. And Liz is there and she's like, how are you feeling? I'm like, surprisingly good. I feel pretty good. And she goes, do you want a drink? I'm like, yeah, I think I want a drink. So she made me a paper plane, which is like my favorite bourbon drink. And I remember like taking a sip and then like 10 hours later, I woke up. Like sitting in a chair, like my grandfather would do. Like I literally woke up, like the glass was, and I like woke up and I like looked around and she's like, I wanted to tell you to go to bed, but I didn't want to wake you up either. And you just kind of sat. She goes, I pulled the drink out of your hand and set it on the table and it's still there if you'd like it. And that's it.
Oh man.
So it was like during the process, I felt really good, all things considered. You know, I changed shoes. The years of restaurant business helped in the course of like, I brought three different pairs of shoes. I'm like, I know if I change shoes, my feet won't hurt. Like doing little stupid things like that. But yeah, Esther and I were up the entire time.
Wow.
Which was crazy. Just crazy.
Speaking of Esther, also a fellow podcast alum, how was it hosting alongside her?
Oh, it was so great. She's a rock star. You know, I've known her for so long. She used to work in Food Network kitchens. Mm-hmm. When I was on Iron Chef, you know, so I've known her for a long time, and to do a show with her was really fun. And I respect her so much as a person, as a cook, and now she's a mom, and, you know, so many cool things going on there. Like it was funny because in the beginning she kept calling me chef. I'm like, Esther, we're co-hosts. Quit calling me chef. She's like, okay, chef. I'm like, Esther, quit calling me chef. Like, she's like, but I'm like, I don't care that you met me when you were like 20, whatever. Like, you got to quit calling me chef. Like, we're doing this together. It's weird. But she was also, I mean, now she knows, and we like, because she was like, man, I'm like, at one point she goes, I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm tired. I'm like, it's natural to be tired. That's where we've been up for all these hours. It turns out she was like a month pregnant.
Oh, she didn't know.
No, when
oh
we
my
filmed.
Gosh.
You know, so she was like,
of course she was tired.
I'm like, yes, now it all makes sense. But she kicked ass. She's great. And it was great too, because, you know, like to host is something I've done a lot of. And like, it was kind of one of her early experiences hosting. So like, I'm like, look, I'll do all the technical stuff and just go, you know, go talk to the chefs, like go do what you do. Like they love you. They respect you. They, you know, so, and we're friends outside of TV world. So I think it always makes it easier to do a show like that when you're friends.
You gotta like the person you're working with if it's 24 hours straight, right?
100%. 100%. It's like I fortunately haven't in my career worked often with people that I don't love being around, so to speak. But it certainly makes life a lot easier when it's like the person's a friend.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've kind of mentioned the judging panel as well, which is also very star-studded.
Oh my God, loaded.
Yeah. How does the judging work? I mean, are they judging throughout the competition as well, right?
No. So every round, there was a different judge, basically, which was, I think, important to us because we didn't want, like, I think if you judge an entire competition, you don't even know what's happening, but it's easy to become biased because you pick a favorite, like everybody does. Like you start to like something that someone's doing. And the other thing that happens at that point is, even in a blind tasting situation, like it always cracks me up, it's a blind tasting. you could have six chefs cook for me. And if I know the six chefs and their food goes down in front of me, I could say, this is Bobby's, this is Morimoto's. This is, you know, I could tell you who's in like a tenth of a second. So right. It's like the blind tasting thing is great. And I get it, whatever. But like, you could tell whose food is who. I that's just what I feel personally. But when you have a different judge every episode, it doesn't allow for them to, like, they don't know what's happened before. Mm-hmm. So they can't judge. Like, if one of the chefs has a meltdown or loses their temper or whatever, that the judge doesn't know that information, mm-hmm. doesn't make them partial to if they like their dish or not. And to me, that's the more important part. And especially when you get judges and chefs of this level, it's another reason, like, I don't think the blind tasting is so important, because chefs of this level are all, like, I've had my best friends tell me, you lost.
You know? You weren't the best dish today. Or
yeah, or vice versa, like, to someone else that they're close with, you lost. Because we take a lot of pride in what we do. And none of us, no chef that I know on that level could eat a dish that they don't like more and deem it the loser. So you don't have to worry about favorites. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff. They're just coming in, tasting the food. This is the person that I think won.
Wow. I mean, I have like so many more questions because I'm like thinking about it. You know, I've been, you know, in these TV productions as well and know how long it takes generally to film one episode. You guys don't have that luxury. You're just like on to the next thing. Like, how well planned out was all of this to keep it into this like 24-hour time?
We were learning as we went. I mean, literally, like, it was like, I remember before we started, Lando goes to me, goes, this is either going to be the greatest show of all time or a complete disaster, you know? And like, I felt it was my job to keep everybody on task, like in front of the camera. Like, that was like a big part of my responsibility on the show. It might be something that people, I mean, they're not even going to really see that part, but it was like, I'm like, okay, you need to be here, you need to be there, you know? And so that was the advantage I feel that I've had from having so much live TV experience, mm-hmm. is I understand the pace,
yeah,
you know, and I understand what I need to say in X amount period of time. And it's, you know, it's not, you're not talking like on like a very highly edited cooking show, for mm-hmm. instance, you need to talk in like a little bloop, 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 you know, like these little beats, you know, and when you're doing like more live style television, that's not necessarily what needs to happen quite as much. Mm. Now, this show was edited, but it's also very live. Like,
yeah,
you know, and
there's no like take two or
no, can I do that again? No, it's you're done, you know, and like, and the other part of it was that I felt was really important is like, and when we were blocking stuff out in the beginning, like, okay, how's this going to work? You're going to walk there. This is the best place for you to stand, blah, 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 blah. They're like, well, how are we going to get culinary in to clean their stations? I'm like, no, we're treating it like a restaurant. Like, you cook on the station, you clean the station.
Wow.
Like, you got to take care of your own station. Like, we're not going to worry about culinary coming in and, oh, it's all set for you again, chef. Here's your clean towel. Here's your like, in a restaurant, you take care of your shit. Like, you got to take care of your own stuff, you know? So these are all chefs, highly regarded chefs. They understand this. Mm. And that's how we're going to explain it to them. And before it started, that's what I said. I'm like, look, you're going to have a station. We might shift you around a different station, but you're responsible for your stuff. You got to clean it. You got to take care of it. You got to, you know, we'll get heavy pots and pans. We'll bring them to the back to the dish room and we'll get them done. But we're not going to wipe down your counter, sanitize your board. Like, you got to do that. Like, just like you would in a restaurant. And I think that's one of the things that made the show really fun.
When we come back, Michael reveals what he hopes viewers take away from the new show 24 in 24 and later talks about the release of his cookbook, Simply Simon Suppers.
Mom
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Is there anything like specific you hope viewers kind of take away from this new format, this show, or just pure entertainment?
I think it really is going to give them a look into how hard sometimes life is as a chef. Not that other lives are, life's hard in general, but it's going to show them, I hope it makes them understand when they go to a restaurant sometimes for dinner, this is what's actually happening in the back. Like this, like when you say, can I get the pork chop with the sauce from the salmon and the starch from the steak and this, like this is what's happening. You know, so maybe it'll be like, have you hugged a chef today?
Yeah.
That's what I want them to watch the show.
Do you really need to alter your order?
Yeah. Go hug the chef. Go hug the chef. Chefs need hugs too. I just feel that this show is going to show more than any cooking show ever, like the true passion, thought process, exhaustion, emotion, all the things that really go into being a chef.
Wow. Well, we are so looking forward to seeing it. And again, congratulations on the new show, but also congratulations for the release of your 8th cookbook recently, Simply Simon Suppers. I want to talk to you about that as well, because obviously 8 cookbooks, that's quite a feat. What was the inspiration behind this one in particular, and what sets it apart from your previous books?
So this one, Jamie, was fun for me because it was like, you know, obviously I love being a chef. I love working in restaurants. I'm honored that I was able to be an Iron Chef, all those kind of things. But at my core, you know, I'm a Greek Sicilian kid. So like Sunday supper in my house growing up as a kid was like a giant thing. Like, it, you know, every Sunday. I mean, my mom cooked dinner 7 nights a week, you know, but Sundays is when everyone came over, like grandparents, friends and family. Like it was always a big deal. And it was typically, you know, like Sunday. It was like a mix of Greek and Italian. It was like Sunday sauce, baklava, you know, grape leaves, like a mix of stuff. But there was always tons of it. And everybody always sat around and ate and told stories and then played cards at the end of the night. And it was like a huge part of my memory as a child. And so for this book, we basically, Liz and I always have Sunday suppers at our house. And this was just 52 weeks of Sunday suppers. So instead of doing this one, the same one that I grew up with every week as a kid, we wanted to do 52 different weeks. So we did 52 complete meals that you could sit around with friends, family, people that you love, or even people that you don't love, and maybe learn a little bit more about them and have dinner. I always feel that, you know, you really want to learn something about somebody and have a good conversation, even if it's something that you might not agree with or understand. You know, food to me is like the great equalizer.
Agreed. No, that's super special. And so are these are actual like real recipes that you guys cooked for your Sunday suppers?
Yeah, we did it. I was like, I want to do this book. Like, you know, like we've done so many different books now. And it's like, I'm like, fortunately, I've worked with the same publishing house for all of them. So they, we have a good rapport now. I'm like, I want to do a book. I'm going to cook 52 Sunday suppers and they're going to go into the book. And then, I mean, we'll test them and do all that, those stuff that we have to do afterwards. But the original one was at our house with friends and family. And, you know, it's always good too, because like I have friends that like will eat anything. I have friends that are super picky. I have friends, you know, we run the gamut, you know, like vegetarians, vegans, carnivores, the whole thing. You know, some people in my family have been all those things in the past 2 years. With all the crazy
hard
diets.
To keep up. Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm a vegan. I don't eat dairy. Okay. Now I'm a vegetarian. Nope. Now I only eat leafy greens. Now I'm a carnivore. I'm like, holy shit.
No gluten. You know? And is this also kind of part of just like this whole evolution from, you know, Simon's dinners during the pandemic that evolved into the show and is now a cookbook? Is that kind of in the same spirit?
It's in the same spirit, but it's funny that you mentioned that, because the ninth cookbook is coming out is Simon's Dinners that we did. We did 100 recipes, 50 from all cooking out, 50 from the show and 50 new ones. But yeah, it's the spirit of that. The spirit is the same. You know, all it's right. just about, I, you know, there may be a time where I do a fancy chef cookbook again. Probably not. You know, I'm more concerned with like people getting around the table and teaching them some like really, I mean, that's what's like Simon's Dinners to me. And the reason I love doing the show so much is one, it's the easiest commute ever. I literally walk out of my, you know, walk out of my bedroom in my pajamas and like they turn the cameras on. Yeah. Liz gets gussied up a little bit more than me, but you know, like the whole premise of that show, I mean, it started during the pandemic, like you said, but like, I just really wanted to show people like basic good techniques on, like, don't be afraid of food. Like, don't be afraid of your grill. Don't be afraid of like cooking simple things. And here's the things you can make. And if you don't get it perfect, who cares? Like, it's more about being around the people that you love. And even like, I always tell people all the time that are afraid. Like, I have friends that like are really nervous to cook. I'm like, if it doesn't work, the worst case scenario, you order pizza. That's the worst case scenario. And we're just on pizza.
I mean, worst case scenario is you burn down the house. But
that's worst case scenario.
That would take a really catastrophic, you know, experiment
really
in the
bad.
Kitchen, I guess.
Really,
yeah.
Really bad. Yeah.
Is that why you think it's like resonated with people so much? Is just that idea of like accessibility and just community?
I do. I think people enjoy all of those things about it. It's funny. It's like as many different shows that I've done in my career, when I see people out and about, the one that they always bring up first is Simon's Dinners.
Really?
I mean, that's, you know, the Chew, Iron Chef, you name it. Like, I've done a lot of stuff over my career, and it's, that is the show that for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because it's in my yard, and like, so there's a connection that like, we're at Michael's house, and Michael was his house, or the food feels approachable to them, or it started during the pandemic when everybody was in a weird time of their lives. But for whatever reason, like I just did a cruise with a bunch of Food Network chefs. Like we cooked on a cruise. There were 3,000 people on the cruise.
Wow.
I'll bet you, I mean, we took photos and everything with pretty much all of them. And I'll bet you 2,000 of the 3,000 people I met, the first thing they talked about was Simon's Dinners, which was great. You know, That's then they asked about my dog. Then they asked about my grandkids. So it's like,
but also things they probably know about from Simon Sitters.
Well, again, yeah, it's because it's like, look, I'm not an actor, you know? So like when they watch Simon Sitters, they're getting a pretty real peek into how our life is, you know? Like we're in our backyard. Sometimes the grandkids just like, I mean, our house is pretty loosey goosey. So it's like, I mean, like, good luck telling a 5-year old she can't walk onto set when the set is the backyard of the house, you know? Like, so sometimes she just pops up. Sometimes a dog just pops up, you know? But yeah, I think that the show just really resonates with people because it's real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's not. They could watch it and very quickly realize that none of this is planned.
I mean, how do you navigate, you know, for both the show and the cookbook, you know, kind of this balance between creating recipes that showcase, you know, your years of, you know, culinary expertise, but also keeping it very achievable for these home cooks of different skill levels.
You know what I really learned the most about it is when we started doing Simon's Dinners in the beginning and it was just on Facebook Live.
Right.
And Liv, Olivia, who still does the show with Liz and I, you know, would stand there with her iPhone and film the show. And as questions would come in, she'd ask me the questions. And Liv couldn't cook. I mean, she could cook a little now, but at the time she couldn't cook at all. She was like 24 and freshly out of college and all that stuff. And she just couldn't cook. So you didn't have, like, if my wife Liz was looking at the questions, she would edit out the ones that seemed like everybody knows this, you know, and she wouldn't ask them. But because it was Olivia who had no cooking experience, they were questions that she would ask. Like, I can't think of a good example now, but like, you know,
like, why did you do that? Or, you know,
yeah, but different. It was like things that, like, as a chef or, you know, Liz is a small, like, people in the restaurant business, like, it seemed like a very common sense thing. So Liv was asking real questions coming in and we were just answering them. And it made me realize, like, wow, a lot of, you know, I take for granted sometimes that people know certain things that they don't know. And it's, you know, it's like if you put me in, my sister's a CPA. If I sat in that office for 8 seconds, there's nothing that I would know. Zero, you know?
You would have so many questions.
I have so many questions, you know? And I had to think of it kind of like that. Like, you know, I've been cooking professionally I've been working in kitchens for 40 years, you know? So something that seems so, like, I'll just do something out of instinct. Like, you know, I put the pan on, I let the pan get hot. Then when the pan gets hot, I put in the fat. And then when the fat gets hot, I start to cook. You know, and Liv is like, why are you heating up the pan? I'm like, what are you talking about?
Of course. She
goes, I just put the pan on and I put the oil in. I'm like, and everything sticks. I'm like, well, yeah, because you're not, you know, so it's like, it made me realize that I had to be more clear. And if I'm more clear and I teach things the right way, then people won't be intimidated, you know, but if I jump from here, but if I jump from point A to point L and leave out everything in between, people are going to be intimidated.
Yeah.
You know, so we write our books in that manner. We try to teach on TV in that manner where we're just really specific. And I used to worry about like, oh, I've said this a million times. Now I say it a million and one because the person watching today might not have watched the first million.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, that's a good way to, you know, approach that, I think. I guess, do you find yourself enjoying that teaching aspect?
Nothing I like better to do.
Really?
In the restaurants, I love teaching the young cooks that I'm lucky enough to host TV shows. I love teaching people how to cook at home. Like I said, I was very spoiled as a kid. My mom cooked every single meal. Like, wow. I say this to people and they think, but this is a true story. I never ate McDonald's till my freshman year in high school. I didn't even know what it was. It wasn't an option. Like, I grew up below middle class. We couldn't afford that stuff. You know, like, my mom cooked, we ate, and I took it for granted. She was a really good cook, and my grandparents were really good cooks, and my dad was a really good cook, you know? So, I feel that being able to teach people some of those things that I learned as a kid and then refined as a chef is super important to me because, you know, I say it all the time. The greatest lessons I learned as a kid were around the dining room table. And so if I could teach people how to cook a little bit and they could get around the table not 7 days a week. No, most people don't have the time to do that anymore, but 1 day a week, 2 days a week, you know, where, you know, you can talk about things. You can, you know, it was like the place that was safe in our house where you could say things, you could show your emotions, you could do all those things. Like, that was important to my mom. And so it's important to me.
Inspiring more Sunday suppers one at a time, right?
Right, absolutely.
One family at a time.
I mean, who doesn't love a Sunday supper?
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, what's next for you? You got the show premiering. You got the cookbook that's out. Maybe a new one coming out, it sounds like. What's next?
Yeah, working on a new cookbook. I mean, we're busy. We're like working on some other fun stuff. Kicking around, opening up a new restaurant, which all my chef friends are trying to talk me out of. I want to do one Greek restaurant. I want to do a Greek restaurant for my mom and for me. I mean, but like Liz and I have been playing around with maybe doing, you know, doing that one more. And then, like, you know, we're in on the West Coast a decent amount now. So maybe doing like a little Greek restaurant in Los Angeles, possibly. And then I'm enjoying watching the grandkids grow up. You know, they're so honest. And like I came home from New York City Food and Wine and I bought a new hat and I really liked it. And it was like this beautiful suede bolo. And I'm like, this hat's great. And I walked in and Emmy was, she had just turned 5. And I walked in the house and she goes, Papa, I don't know how I feel about this hat. I'm like, you don't know how you feel about it. And she's 5. And she looks at me and she goes, it's not working for you.
Oh my God.
I'm like, could one female in this house like me? Just one.
Wait, do you still have the hat? Did you keep it?
I kept it. I haven't worn it since, though.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm like, I said, Liz, are you feeding her line? She goes, oh, nope, that was all her by herself. You know, so that's been really fun. And our son Kyle's opening up. He owns the donut shop in Sag Harbor. He's getting ready to open up a little slider shop next door to it. So I'm going to help him with that this summer. So that'll be really fun. I'm going to be the head burger. If anybody's in Sag Harbor, I'll be the lead burger cook at Grindstone Slider Shop all summer.
So I love that. Oh, yeah, my gosh.
Come and harass me.
I definitely will.
Yeah, it should be fun. But it's, look, I feel very fortunate. I've got to do what I love to do my entire career, you know, and for a very good part of it with my wife, Liz. And now our son's in the business. I'm, you know, he's doing pastries and stuff, but I get to help him do things too. And, you know, if there's a God, my grandkids will not be in the restaurant business.
Just invite them all to set on the next time you shoot the 24 and 24.
Yeah. I mean, there is going to get a point where I could just cook Sunday suppers and nothing else, but
and that's it.
But I'm still really loving what I'm doing. You know, I just enjoy it every day.
Well, until that time comes, keep enjoying it and keeping on. We do have a few final little rapid fire questions for you. And then we have our final question that we ask everybody. So rapid fire round. The first one, I think you already told us, go-to cocktail. You said paper plane, right?
Yeah, paper plane.
So what? So for somebody that's never had it, what is in a paper?
Paper plane is equal parts bourbon or whiskey, Aperol and lemon juice, typically served up. I enjoy it with one big cube. And in the summer, I'll usually add a little bit of like tonic, something bubbly to it, you know, just to kind of spritz it up.
Love it. Favorite thing to tease Bobby about?
That he's a grown man and he wears medium shirts.
Schmedium.
Schmedium. Why are they big on him? I don't know what's funnier, that he wears a medium or that they're big on him. He's so cute.
I love it. Grill or stovetop?
Grill.
Of course. Your go-to Simply Simon Suppers recipe?
Cavatelle.
TV show you're currently binging?
Ooh, currently binging. Just last night, Liz and I watched 3 episodes of a show called Warrior.
Okay. Oh, I think I've heard of this.
It's pretty intense. I don't know if I'm going to... It's intense.
You don't know if you're going to keep going.
I mean, it's good, but it's very intense.
Okay.
I'm like, I was like, ooh, man, this is pretty graphic.
Might need something a little bit more lighter.
Exactly.
Most underrated kitchen tool?
Bench scraper.
Okay, that's a good one. And this last question is not rapid fire. It's the same question we ask everybody. We obviously asked you 3 years ago. I do not remember what you said. So we'll see if our avid listeners can see if you said the same thing. So the question is, what would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So we want take us through like breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert. You can travel in between meals, time travel. Anybody can cook these meals for you, living or dead. There's no rules. Calories don't count either, by the way. So yeah, whatever you want, like your ideal food day with no rules.
Okay, let's see. I mean, I would definitely have my mom make lasagna.
Okay.
I would also have Mark Vetri make me any kind of pasta he felt like.
Okay. Are these for breakfast or lunch or dinner or whenever? It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I don't really follow those rules so
you don't
much.
You don't want to be confined to actual like.
No, sometimes I love eating eggs at dinner, by the way.
Sure, same.
You know, for breakfast, if I could make any breakfast I'd have, I probably have, I love crispy eggs. So I would probably have like a crispy style egg over corned beef hash.
And you just did a little tutorial on your Instagram recently.
I did. And people
were really upset in the comments, I feel
oh
like.
Oh, my God. When you cook eggs, if you want to get like a billion comments on any social, just make eggs. Like, they're either too dry, too wet. Not like somebody, like I made scrambled eggs a couple weeks ago, like my soft scrambled eggs. And they're like, not cooked. I'm like, I finished them with butter and the butter melted. Like they put raw. I'm like, no, butter doesn't melt in raw. Like, I can't go through the science of this for you. Okay, I'm sorry. Off on another tangent. So, crispy eggs, corned beef hash. You know, I love some of Bobby's. He doesn't make them much anymore, but his tamales are like, I would love one of his tamales or some kind of crispy rice dish. Man, he makes crispy rice, right? I wouldn't feel special, though, if he made crispy rice.
Yeah, he makes rice, crispy rice like every day.
He just makes crispy rice. Yeah, it's all he does anymore. It's crispy rice. So, I'd have him make a tamale. I would have Mark Vetri make a pasta. My favorite one that he ever, at Vetri in Philly, my favorite one he ever made was a ravioli stuffed with like roasted beet and mascarpone with a lemon poppy seed brown butter that like literally, if I had hair, it would have made it blow back. and then I would probably have my mom's lasagna.
Okay.
I double like carbs all day for me. I'm like not one of those. Like I like carbs. Like same. People don't want to eat them. I don't care. Just let me eat my carbs and be happy. And then I would probably have my mom's baklava and a big scoop of ice cream, either from Grater's. If I went got it in Grater's, these are two Ohio ice cream places. I would get their plain chocolate chip, which is incredible, or Mitchell's, which is another great ice cream place in Cleveland. And they do some great blended ice creams that I would, you know, they make like a peanut butter, all kinds of different ones that are great. So,
yeah,
ice cream, baklava, lasagna, Vetri pasta, filet tamale, and then corned beef hash with crispy eggs. And I would probably, because very few days go by that I don't have a peanut butter jelly sandwich. So somewhere in there, maybe as a late night snack, I would have a toasted PBJ. And then go to bed.
I think it's like PB&J day, or it's coming up or something.
It is, because I did the Today Show and I got to the Today Show and they were making stacks of peanut butter jellies. And I thought, oh shit, they must know that I love peanut butter jellies. Like, what are you guys making all this peanut butter jelly sandwiches for? They're like, oh, it's National Peanut Butter Day. I'm like, oh, that's a shame.
You're like, oh, I didn't. Yeah, so it's not for me.
Can I have a roadie? Come on, give me one for the road.
Well, it sounds like a perfect food day. And if memory serves, I do think that mom's baklava was on your first answer as well. That rung a bell when you said it. So
I think I'll bet if someone looks back, I'll bet you there's a lot of similar answers.
Yeah, I think the Vetri pasta might be on there, too. So
yeah.
Well, somebody will have to let us know. But in the meantime, definitely check out the new show. So excited to see it. And congrats on all your success.
Thank you, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
And just a reminder, 24 in 24 Last Chef Standing premieres April 14th on Food Network. Make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Mom
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.